I probably don't need this thing. My husband can testify to that. Okay, well, I'm gonna turn on a timer. Because you could sign a lot of birthday cards with me. If it's not a speaker meeting, it becomes a speaker meeting when I'm around. So my name is Anna, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Anna.
And I'm in a lot of good company here. I think a lot of people here will be able to relate to my experience. I was taught to qualify myself when I speak. So my sobriety date is 3/14/1990. My home group is the Journey Group, which meets in Lake Stevens, Washington on Saturday mornings at 8:30. I would encourage you to stop by if you're ever in that area. It's a really good meeting, very welcoming, very solution and spiritual based. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I sponsor other women. I was taught to encourage my spiritual growth by reading other spiritual material to encourage more openness in my spiritual life. My grand sponsor has an accountability group, which I admit I'm not doing now, but did do for many years by driving 48 minutes each way once a month to meet with all of her sponsees and have a little potluck with the women and then go over a list of questions that held us accountable to ourselves by being accountable to other women on, were we going to our home group? Were we going there early? Were we, did we have a service position, which I do? Were we working with other women in the book? Were we doing prayer and meditation daily? Were we doing the 10th step daily? Were we reading spiritual material? So just to keep us doing the things that I don't do if I'm not, or at least I'll do it for about 3 months and then I'll get the good results and then I'll like slack off. Because that's my MO. That's my MO when I go to the gym. I get results and then I slack off. That's just my nature because I'm human. So by doing that and then going back the next month, and I mean, this woman would take notes and you'd show up the next month and she'd go, okay, so you said you were gonna do meditation 10 minutes every day. Did you do it? I'd be like, oh, I said that? Because no, I didn't even remember saying that. So having that accountability group taught me what my deficiencies were. It taught me that I needed to have a 10-step buddy, that we texted each other. And that text would come in and I'd be like, oh, crap, I'm already in bed. I haven't even done it. I'd get out my book and read the stuff. And I'd go, oh. And I'd march down the hall and say, I'm sorry to my daughter, you know, I realize I shouldn't have talked to you that way. And it made me do the work. And it was good for me, you know. And then I would report back to my 10-step buddy and I'd see a pattern. And I quit doing that pattern. It was good for me. So, and it made me talk about the accountability group when I spoke. And other people started doing it, so it was helpful in AA. So all of those things have been so beneficial to me. Let's see here. What I have found in my experience here is that I was a pretty high bottom drunk, and hearing some of the drunk logs is like really fun for me. It's entertaining, but I don't necessarily relate to the, you know, jail stories and the DUIs and all that kind of stuff. And it's okay, like I said, it's entertaining, but what I have concluded is what I relate to and what I know everyone else is gonna relate to is that one moment in time where no matter what your story is, you get to, and I get to, with my little story of the moment of hopelessness. Everybody has the moment of hopelessness. That's common. My moment of hopelessness was I was having just a flat spiritual breakdown. I kept moving my moral line. I felt lost and hopeless and did not know why. And I kept trying to fill that hole. And I found myself in a place where I realized, and God, that moment where you realize, I'm screwed. I am screwed. I can't do this enough, and I can't not do it. So hell, I might as well just do it until I can get it over with. And I couldn't even do that. I lived in Alaska, and I was trying to plan ways to kill myself where I could like get under the ice and go there long enough to where they wouldn't find the body until spring, and I couldn't even plan that because I didn't want to, you know, really be devastating to the people who did care about me. I couldn't do it. It was that moment where I realized I was trapped. And I couldn't quite piece together that the disease had me, that, you know, the disease was the power, and I was the, I didn't really have that all put together, but I was trapped. I'd lost my power of choice. And I was just really trying to do enough to get it over with. So there was that night, the magical night where, and in my story is that I was using other substances. And I think that's important. There's a lot of people out there that do. And for me, that's magical, because thank God, that got it over with quicker for me. I am grateful for that. Otherwise, I think I would have been one of those sad little ladies in her house slippers that goes out and gets her mail, you know, and it would have taken me a long damn time. I'm grateful for that. I'm also grateful that when I finally did get into treatment, that it was explained to me, and I was forced to look at the fact that just because I thought the other substances were the problem, that I finally looked at where the real problem, underlying problem, was, and that I am now able to identify myself as an alcoholic. I'm glad that was brought to my attention. So I had this night where I was locked in the bathroom, and you know, it was one of those push button locks, and I'm so hallucinogenic that I'm trying to keep other people out of the bathroom, and I've got it locked and taped, and I'm holding the door, and you know, I'm just out there, and you know, you can take the coat wire and stick it through the little hole, you know. I'm just out there. To this day, I do not know what reality was and what it wasn't. I'm sticking notes through the side, and man, I've got my foot holding the door, but I'm still trying to get the drink and get that drink down, but quietly. I don't want the ice to make any noise because someone might hear it. You know, it's amazing what we have to do and what we're willing to do. And a girlfriend of mine sent me a note in treatment when I was there. She was trying to be supportive. And this is back in the Nancy Reagan days. And on the back of it, she wrote, "Just say no." And I was so pissed at her. Yes. I could have just said no, I wouldn't be in here, you know? And my sponsor pointed out to me that part in the book where it says that, you know, how other people are looking at, you know, if she was such a sweet girl, he should have stopped for her, and you know, all those things. And they're just looking at things from their experience with drink, and they're just doing the best they can. We cannot be angry at them for not understanding the disease. They're just looking at it from their experience. So when our sponsees are upset with, you know, the way other people aren't relating to them, they can't. That they're just doing the best they can. So the hopelessness is the commonality, and we all hit that hopelessness. That last night finally got me into treatment, and when I was in treatment, the one thing that I found that was so magical was that I was able to see that I was an alcoholic, because the book was the magic for me. The book validated me. Everything in this book leapt out at me and showed me that that's how you think, that's how you drink, that's how you approach things. That was me. That was the answer to the $64,000 question. I could not understand how I was such a bright, well-performing, good-hearted, you know, person, and yet I could not manage this one thing, which I thought was a moral thing. I couldn't understand why I kept breaking this promise to myself and other people. And it finally answered that. The doctor's conversation answered that. And part of the mental obsession answered that. And that was so freeing to me. I felt like I fit in, and I understood why. So the book validated me. One other thing happened in treatment that was earth-shattering for me. And that was that that man over there walked in. And when I saw him, by the way, I'm a crier. When I saw him, he was mad as hell. He was, you know, not happy to be in treatment. But, and I was asked to show him around. I'd been there for a couple weeks, so I was feeling much better. And you know how when you go on vacation for like 3 weeks and you get brought back to the airport, you've got all these bags, you take a cab, you get home, you unload all your bags, you get in your house and you're just like, oh, you just flop on the couch, you're just like, oh God, I'm home. Just so relieved to be home. That's what I felt like when I saw him. I was just home. And it was a very strange feeling. Also, I was already married, so it was a very strange feeling. I didn't quite know what to do with that. Well, the book validated me. I went on with treatment. I went on with sobriety. And he went on with sobriety, and I found willingness. And I decided, well, this is what the program is telling me to do. His sponsor said, stay away from her. And my sponsor said, well, this is what you need to do. You need to follow these principles and do the next indicated thing, the next right indicated thing. And this is how you get sober. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. So I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. So long story short, we did not talk to each other again for the next 4 years. 4 years went on. I worked on my program. I worked on sobriety. I worked on the principles of sobriety. I was willing to apply myself to what sobriety meant. The husband was not really on board. He was not into the principles of honesty and open-mindedness and willingness, and that marriage did not work out. So when that marriage did not work out, I contacted that man to say, you know, I'm really sorry that, you know, that's how we met, and only to make an amends to him. And after 4 years, not knowing what happened to him, we ended up getting together. Because I took the path that I was told to take in this program, which is not what I expected at all. I didn't even expect to be with him. I mean, it was just a miracle. So I would like to talk about the way this program has worked for me. The honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness that has been given to me, and how it has worked for me throughout my years in this program, because there have been some amazing events that what I found in my years of continuous sobriety. That's how you announced your years. And I love that because they've not been, I mean, I fought this thing tooth and nail. Everything I've done in here that I've learned, that I've gotten, has been growth through me screwing up, usually through me learning through pain or in other words, not necessarily me, you know, dancing through the flowers, you know what I mean? So I'd like to talk about some of the things that I've gained through the lessons, and they're usually not graceful ones. So the willingness to apply immediately, that was beautiful. I gained something from that right away. Honesty. I didn't get honesty immediately. Honesty has been a long, slow process for me. I worked for the best friend of the first man I was married to, and this guy was a jeweler. The way I got the job was I used to be this guy's ad agent, and because I knew his business so well, and I knew all about his business, I was married to his best friend, he could trust me, and he could. I did everything for this guy, signed his checks, did all this stuff. So I'm running his business. He's a lovely man. He went to take care of his parents and gave me the keys to his jewelry store. I handled everything for him. But it began to irritate me that here I am doing everything for this guy, and he's not being very gracious back. He doesn't even give the employees a discount on their jewelry. And here we are, you know, I mean, like, seriously? Well, maybe he gave us a 10% discount, but he was not very gracious to his employees. And I'm trying to work this program, and yet he is intentionally playing games like, we'll send him the check, but don't sign it. He's like back on his bills, you know, doing all this stuff. And here I am, young sobriety, trying to work my program, and I'm like, God, that's really rubbing on my program, you know? So I'm starting to build these resentments. Am I working them through with a sponsor? Not really. So I'm not applying my program tools to deal with this, but I'm building this stuff up. Well, that goes on for a while, and we end up moving part of the building, and as a result, a necklace that's not owned by anyone anymore. We had military people who had moved away. This necklace is there, the people have moved, we've tried to contact them, we tried mailing them, we tried phoning them, the people are gone. It is a not very valuable necklace, okay? Doesn't have anything to do with it, but in my mind, the justification is going on, people are gone, necklace isn't very valuable. So I decide, I can take it home because he owes me. And nobody, see, this is how it works. This is how my alcoholic mind works. And I take it home. Nobody owns it, and he owes me. So I have this necklace. I've moved now. I don't work for the guy anymore. It's been years. I've never worn the necklace. Can't wear it. It's eating me away. It's now, I don't know, 8-9 years later. I can't deal with it. I know this guy is going to fly through. I have to get this off my chest. I say, will you please meet me at the airport? I have to get honest in order to have sobriety. The guy meets me at the airport, and I said, I got to tell you about this necklace. He's like, what the hell? I'm like, I got to tell you what happened with this necklace. In order for me to be able to stay sober, I have to have honesty. These are the things I've learned in my program. I got that at like 6 years of sobriety. I got rid of that necklace and gave it. That was while I'm married to this guy, not even married to the other guy anymore. I had to have that honesty because it was eating away at me. Totally different sponsor later on. 7 years of sobriety, open-mindedness. We are in a huge fight. We have a daughter. I won't marry him because I didn't want to be that girl who gets married because she has to. So I won't marry him. I haven't gotten a driver's license in the state of Seattle yet. still have an Alaska driver's license. I, his Catholic mother isn't going to tell me what to do. I'm just, you know, and I go to a meeting and with a sponsee, and like Benny Hahn, this guy that's famous, he's been on Time Magazine's cover. He's training this guy to do tent revivals, and he wants people in sobriety to come because he specifically wants to reach the recovery groups. And I'm like, yeah, let's go to that. I mean, like voyeurism all over it, right? This'll be fun. Totally wrong motives, okay? I want to go to a tent revival. Let's go with the responsees. So this, only because I don't want to go home, okay? So I'm going to go to this tent revival. And all of a sudden, parked outside this tent revival, because I don't want to go home because I'm in a fight with my guy, I get washed over with, what are your motives? What are you doing? Why are you taking this sponsee in here? I said, God, you're right. But I'm here. So if I'm here, at least let me go in and be open-minded. That's all I said. We go in. There's like 200 people in there. It's a big place. The woman next to me is like, what? You know, she's doing the holy roller thing. And I'm like, wow. And he starts talking. And he starts talking about how lonely you are. And God knows how lonely you are. And he knows that what you really want to do is be together and be whole and be happy. And he starts walking down the aisle. And he's staring at the woman, like, right behind me. I'm like, God, you know, and I keep turning around looking. And he starts walking down the aisle. And he's like, God knows your loneliness. And he's getting louder. And he starts walking, and I keep looking at the woman behind me, and he walks right up and puts his hand out right at me, and I'm like, oh my God. And what are you gonna do, you know? I mean, it's like being at the hypnotist, you know? And so I just get up, and he takes my hand, and I just walk right up there, and I kid you not, I get up there, and all he did was just, and I was down like that, just like what you see on TV, down. And I felt the most amazing, all I can tell you is it was pure compassion all the way through everything that man had felt for 3 years asking me to marry him went through my mind. How long he had asked me to marry him, how many times he had suggested, how many times he wondered, is she gonna leave with that baby? What's gonna happen? Everything went rushing through my body in compassion. All the selfishness, all the, I'm not gonna do this, and I'm not gonna do that. And I just went home thinking, what about him? What has he been thinking all this time? No, I didn't go join the church. No, I didn't do all of that. But my eyes changed. I saw things differently because I asked God to let me be open-minded. That's all. And I went home and I asked him to let me just explain to him that I saw things differently. And will you pray with me? And I said, I want to marry you. I want to marry you. And he said, well, yeah, maybe I don't want to marry you. Because he was still mad. Of course he was still mad. It took 3 months before we got married, but I wanted to marry him because I wanted to, not because someone asked me to. And we've been through some really tough times. And I've never wavered because I saw things differently because I was open-minded. Honesty was not perfect. It's still growing in me. At 10 years, I had a job, and I was being paid under the table, which I thought was perfectly fine. Everybody gets paid under the table, don't they? And my tax guy said, no, you cannot do this. This is horrible. You are running a business. Your father is involved. What the heck? Don't even talk to me. And so I went to my sponsor, and I'm like, what? I literally had a paper, brown paper bag. She's like, Anna, Steve has been running a business forever. He's paid every single tax there is. That's what you do. And I'm like, she said, honey, just pay the taxes. And I'm like, but he's going to fire me. He wants to pay under the table. What is it? You're going to ruin the whole thing. She goes, just go talk to the guy. Tell him you need to be on the books. I did. I went and talked to the guy. He said, oh, you need to be on the books? Oh, okay. And he did that. And as a result, we bought a house about 6 months later. Something came up. We wanted to buy it. Guess what? We wouldn't have been able to buy it had we not had reported income that would enable us to buy it. Which, you know, it's funny how that works, right? Open-mindedness. At 17 years of sobriety, that wonderful job that I had the reported income for turned out to be my dream job. I loved that job. Oh, crud, I never set my timer. Does anybody know how long I've been talking?
Keep going.
Oh, you're fine. You
okay.
Have 25 minutes.
Okay.
Four hours.
Wouldn't surprise me. That dream job, which I absolutely loved, I literally made this guy one of those crafted ceramic type things for Christmas, and in the back it said, have I told you lately how much I love working here? Loved this job. We were robbed. It's a jewelry store. We were robbed, and ultimately he passed away, and we had to close the store. As a result of closing the store, my best friend and partner at the store, who was my workout partner, et cetera, ended up saying, well, there's no reason for me to stay here anymore. I'm divorcing my husband and moving to Maine. So I lost my job, my identity, because I was a jewelry designer and, you know, people would tell me every day how fantastic I was. That wasn't happening anymore. I didn't get up and go to work out with my best friend anymore. I didn't have my best friend in Seattle anymore. I didn't have my creative outlet anymore. And 4 months before that, before my boss died, my sponsor died. And so that happened, and then I spent a year keeping the store alive for his widow. Then she decided to go ahead and close the store. So there was a year of hell. Then the store closed, my best friend left, etc. So then I sat in a chair for 2 years. I sat in my blue chair, and he went to work, the kids went to school, and I pretended like I was functioning. But really, I would say, okay, as soon as this show is over, I'm gonna get up and clean the house. And that would go on until about 10 of 2. And I knew at 2, he was gonna get off work and they were gonna get out of school. And I would run around and start like 4 projects. I'd put the vacuum cleaner over there, I'd turn the oven on, And I was lost. Absolutely lost. I never mourned any of them. I was lost. And so finally, one day I was standing at the kitchen window, and I suddenly realized, I kind of came out of this fog and realized, oh my God, I was standing there being really, really concerned about whether or not my neighbor was taking his Valium properly for his dislocated shoulder. And I was like, oh my God, that is like a relapse thought. I am crazy. I am gonna relapse any minute now. I need help. And I literally out loud said, oh my God, I need help. And then miraculously, I heard the ABCs. I heard, you are alcoholic and this is unmanageable. No human power can relieve this from you. God can and will if you seek him. And I said, God, help me, out loud. And the next moment, I heard, "Girl, you know what to do." And I walked over to the little area in my kitchen and I grabbed a schedule. And I did not look for a meeting, I looked for a big book study. Not a general discussion, because the answers are in the book. I know that. I love the book. So I found Big Book Study, and I went there that day, and at, you know, they have the moment of silence for the alcoholic who's still suffering, and the minute that silence broke, I said, sometimes it's not just the newcomer that's suffering. I have 17 years of sobriety, and I am in trouble. I need help. I need a service position now. I need a temporary sponsor now. And I need to be part of this home group tonight. Because you have to save your own ass. That's what I found. So that's what I did in that moment. And they helped me that night. And eventually, you know, it took me a few weeks, but I found a new sponsor. And that was my new experience with open-mindedness, because this sponsor had me say the set-aside prayer. And if you don't know what that is, if there's anyone here with long-term sobriety that is floundering, come ask me what the set-aside prayer is. Because I've been there, and floundering in sobriety stinks. It's, you know, having the answers and not using them stinks. So I said that set-aside prayer for a year. I was on the first step with 18 years of sobriety for a year because I could not get my unmanageability. Because while I sat in that blue chair, I had cobwebs on my front porch that I really want, I mean, you know, they're cobwebs for God's sake. And I kept saying, I really got to get rid of those cobwebs on my front porch. And she said, how's that going? I said, well, they're cobwebs. She said, you need a higher power to help you with those cobwebs. And I said, that is the stupidest effing thing I've ever heard. How is a higher power going to, and she said, well, how are you doing with it? And I could not get off my ass to get those cobwebs. I just couldn't do it. I just did not have, just like I could not stop drinking on my own. I had to surrender those cobwebs to a higher power. This new surrender that I had at 18 years of sobriety completely changed my sobriety with the set-aside prayer. Completely. I mean, I had the glow like a pregnant woman after this. It was insane. It's insane. I'm so in love with AA. It's amazing. Then I had a new experience with willingness. And that is, I had not been sponsoring anyone. I had not been, you can't have this thing and not be giving it away. You can't just be hanging out, you know? So I got this gift back of understanding this is a we program. I climbed back in the lifeboat. Oh my God, what a miracle that is to understand. This is like having a lottery ticket. Being in here is like getting a lottery ticket. Now I know if someone gave me a lottery ticket and said, you know, this is one of those lotteries that is must be present to win. You know, and you get a free ticket, I'd be like, you know, what would you say? I know what I'd say. I'd say, well, what's the prize? I'm not sure I'm going to stick around unless I know what the prize is. Because that's how I think. Is it going to be worth it to me? I'm telling you, it's worth it. But maybe you don't believe me. So go to a few meetings and listen to some other people and see if it's worth it. You know, be the judge yourself. You know, this is what I've gained. So the accountability, the meditation, the spiritual reading, the Super Bowl, the year that we had, we were at the Super Bowl. That was the night of my home group meeting. We were at a Super Bowl party in Monroe. And I left. Oh, you guys don't know where Monroe is. I left and drove 50 minutes to go be at my home group meeting. And I had people saying, you have 25 years sobriety. Why do you have to be at the home group meeting? Let somebody else be at the home group meeting. And I said, that's why. People are watching me. That's why. This is a wee thing, and it's way too beautiful. It's way too beautiful. And what I realized was that the big book validated me. Now I'm validating the big book. And that's a beautiful thing. If I walk the walk, if I use the tools and do the things that it says to do, then I'm actually showing that it gives you the things it says it's going to give you. It's true. It says that, you know, that deep within every man, woman, and child, the power is deep within every man, woman, and child, the fundamental idea of God. Well, I think that's true. And when it said in the last analysis, that's awesome, because I can analyze things to death. But that's the last analysis, so I don't have to, right? And if it's deep within me, then it's deep within you. So that goes back to the we thing. So I need you. I need you. And then there's a guy named Mo in Nashville. And I wrote this down because he always used to say this poem. He said, I sought my God I could not see. And I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my fellow man, and there I found all three. That's what AA has given me. That's what you have given me, so thanks. Thanks for having me talk.
Thank you. Oh. All right. Thank you, Anna, and another round of applause. You got in the like you can have a little gift.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing. Oh, all right. Remember, we could use some help to clean up.
Oh. No.